This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Resistance Fighter, an educational program from Syngenta for growers invested in managing resistant weeds and protecting the future of their operation.
Well, it's that time of year. You know, holiday shopping is at a fever pitch. Folks are decking the halls, baking cookies, donning those ugly sweaters, and the presents keep coming for agriculture. Waters of the U.S. update, a farm bill, tariff aid payments, all poised to roll out this week. It's the happiest time since Bing Crosby tap dance with Danny Kaye. Unless you look at that Mueller probe, riots in Paris, a trade war with China. We're fine. It's Christmas. Pass the eggnog, would you?
From the studios of Farm Journal Broadcast, this is AgriTalk, agriculture's national talk show since 1994. Here's your host, Chip Flory.
Hey there, everyone. Clinton Griffiths in for Chip Flory this week. He's out, on the range doing his best impression of Elmer Fudd, seeing what if he can't get that wascally wabbit. So we'll be maybe checking in with Chip and see how things are going from the middle of the Iowa forest. So happy you could join us on a Monday. I've had a little too much coffee. I'm really excited and ready to go. We've got a ton of things to cover this week. From China, what's happening on this? And everyone's waiting. Is China going to come in and buy something? It's almost like a hush has fallen over the entire country. Will China come in and buy some grain? We're all watching and waiting. We did have an announcement about some grain sales today, maybe some corn being sold to Mexico, I do believe. So, you know, there's some things happening out there. We've got lots of stuff happening in Washington, a farm bill possibly rolling out tomorrow. And guess what? We're going to have the House Chairman of the Ag Committee here tomorrow. Mike Conaway is expected to be here to talk about that farm bill as the text rolls out and we start marching our way toward a vote this week. Expected to be passed in both chambers. We'll have to see. And then we've got these MFP payments, all of that happening this week. We'll get you as many details as we can as we try to keep up with everything going on. Good stuff and bad. Plenty of both to talk about this time of year. Today's program, we're going to have Michael Clark with BAMWX talking about the weather. We know a big storm went through the southern half of the U.S. Joe Sheely with the U.S. Meat Export Federation. Hey, guess what? Exports of meats are still pretty good. He's going to tell us why he thinks so, and maybe what could make it better, because we're always looking to improve. And then, of course, our good friend Machinery Pete will be here to talk about some of the exciting stuff that they're doing, including an auction that's happening online right now that you probably want to check out. Sounds like it's going to be a pretty cool deal. Machinery Pete will be here at the end of the show to take your calls, answer your questions, and, of course, keep us up to date what's happening in the world of machinery. Before we get to all of that, Tyne Morgan joins us with the news, and she brought cookies today, ladies and gentlemen. She brought in sugar cookies. Fantastic.
That I made with the girls.
Yes, they were great.
And I took a video of Kimbrel, my youngest, my three-year-old, and she told me, I actually didn't wick that one.
Yes. Well.
So whether I brought in the one she actually didn't wick or not, I'm not telling you.
Well, I'm sure I don't care because it tasted fantastic.
Well, the end of the video, she said, can I wick some more now?
That's awesome.
That's all she cared about was, I said, my favorite thing to do with the girls is make Christmas sugar cookies or sugar cookies of any type. So every weekend we're making sugar cookies. But I do have a question. You said Yes. Pass the eggnog. Do you really like eggnog?
I do like eggnog. And maybe I'm one of the
so
weird
James.
People that does.
I'm not a fan. So I'll buy eggnog just for him.
Right.
But I didn't know if you were one of those eggnog consumers or not.
Well, see, so here's the deal. I won't drink more than like a glass a day. And it's kind of one of those, a little bit is enough. I don't need more than that, but I like it. I like it around the holidays, but I know it's one of those hit or miss things. Like not everybody's really into it, but I like it. Maybe because I don't ask what's in it. I just think it tastes good.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I just don't.
You get the right kind of eggnog.
That's maybe really I haven't good. Had the right kind of eggnog. I am from Missouri.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying.
Okay.
What's going on in news? Nothing?
Well, yes. A lot of hearsay of things.
Sure, we've got that.
But we do have beef exports continue to be red hot, Clinton. I know we'll get more details later, but the U.S. Meat Export Federation says beef exports are on a record-shattering pace in October, up 6% from a year ago. Beef shipments to Taiwan, up 34% from a year ago. Exports to the Philippines, up 29%. Now, October pork exports by volume hitting the largest total since May. Strong buyers of U.S. pork continue to be South America, Colombia, and Peru, up 25%. So we'll get more details later. But China still isn't buying U.S. soybeans. vaccines, but Bloomberg reporting that could soon change. Bloomberg reporting China intends to announce this month the first batch of U.S. soybean buys. Details are still reportedly being worked through, including whether to buy 5 million metric ton or 8 million metric tons. But on the China front, U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer says there is a hard deadline for the U.S.-China trade talks. That's the 90-day timeline of March 1st. But what we do know, on the books, a big buy from Mexico being reported this morning. A new sale shows 1.6 million metric tons, 1.1 million of that for the 2018 to 2019 marketing year. So a big buy from Mexico. Also going on right now, a hearing on negotiating the U.S.-Japan trade agreement. Topics include the U.S. interests and priorities. That's happening on the Hill right now. Also a big week this week is the Farm Bill is expected to be unveiled. House and Senate leaders are expected to file the conference report and release the details tomorrow. That sets up the final passage of the bill this week. It's unclear if the House will tack it to another bill, but Senate Ag Committee Chairman Pat Roberts already said the Senate will vote on it as a standalone bill. House Ag Ranking Member Colin Peterson told reporters last week that he thinks almost all of the Democrats in the House will vote for the bill, is what he said. But you'll have the House Ag Committee Chairman Conaway on tomorrow, right?
Yes, he'll be here tomorrow, and he's going to be talking about that very thing. We'll try to get his take on where we stand and whether or not this thing's going to get passed, because we're running out of time.
You know what's not running out of steam?
What's that?
This snow. Massive snow continuing across the South. Lubbock received more than 10 inches of snow over the weekend, Clinton. The National Weather Service says Lubbock received more snow this year than Detroit, Milwaukee, Anchorage, Minneapolis, Denver. Drought is wiped off the map in Texas. Not good if you're cotton farmers. Still trying to get this.
Still trying to get a crop out.
Getting the crop out. But it's amazing how things have changed in just a three-month window as far as the drought goes across the South.
Beautiful segue. We're going to bring in Michael Clark, BAMWX, with us now. Michael, as we talk about that winter storm moved across the South, boy, that was a pretty big one, pretty big system that, you know, just developed and worked its way across.
Yeah, it was. It was on the radar for quite a while, too. And portions of western North Carolina got 24 to 30 inches of snow that storm. So
that's a lot of snow in one storm. Goodness sakes.
When you got these El Nino winters, that you can have storms like this. It may not be the last one.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about the El Nino winter. I mean, we've been kind of waiting for the pattern. It seemed like we were in a pattern through November, first week of December here, but now do you feel like we're shifting more to that El Nino feel?
Yeah, we are. We're going to get a little bit of a warm-up here for about the next 10 days, but then right around Christmas into the new year, into January, I think this pattern can get very cold and very stormy. I think we haven't seen the coldest of the weather by far. So this little warm-up is typical of the onset of an El Nino, and what's following that may be pretty impressive.
Okay, so if you're going to, as we get through Christmas, are we talking return of polar vortex and like long stretches of really bitter cold in the northern part of the U.S.? Are we talking storms in the South?
I think both. Okay. I think both's on the table. It can get very cold, sustained for a long time, for several weeks. And that polar vortex may become more of a popular word as we get into the new year.
Nah, I don't want you. Don't talk about that. That's not fun. That's like the worst.
Hey, it's fun for me.
Yeah, I know. Well, that, you know, and we appreciate you keeping us up to date. So, hey, over the next couple of weeks for the folks kind of in the Midwest trying to wrap up this harvest that has drug out forever, you think we're going to be drier? Yeah.
We're definitely dry this week. It's a little bit drier than normal next week, perhaps, as well, as we have a split flow. It's wet in the northern Canadian prairies and wet in the deep South, but dry in the Midwest.
All right. Well, we appreciate you keeping us up to date. I guess we'll have you back and talk about that polar vortex later. Thanks, Michael. Appreciate it so much. All right, everybody, stick with us. We're going to continue our conversation here on AgriTalk. We've got Joe Sheely, Communications Director for the U.S. Meat Export Federation, talking about the latest sales. We'll be right back.
It seems like everybody is dealing with some weed resistance. Let's bring in Dane Bowers, herbicide technical product lead for Syngenta. Dane, what is the most important thing for growers to understand when we're talking about managing resistant weeds in soybeans?
That's a great question, Chip. I think what I would say is the key to managing resistant weeds and preventing further development of resistance is diversification. So when you diversify your program, you decrease the chance of a weed being able to overcome one single site of action. And so one of the key things here is utilizing multiple effective sites of action in your herbicide program. The importance there is that it's very difficult for a weed to overcome the effectiveness of multiple herbicides, where it's much easier for it to find to escape through one. And really the key word there is effective multiple sites of action, because we know that it's really important that the grower select a herbicide that has effectiveness of all the sites of action against the key driver weeds in their field. And the other thing I think that is really important here is that growers need to be using a pre- and a post-emergence herbicide program. So depending only on post-herbicides is really putting tremendous selection pressure on those post-herbicides. So we can take a lot of those weeds out with a pre-emergence herbicide, and adds more diversity to the program as well. So, I would recommend using a pre-emergence herbicide like Broad-X XC or Boundary. We can follow that with a post-emergence application of herbicides like Flexstar GT or Prefix. And each of those herbicides has multiple effective sites of action against key broadleaf weeds and also provides residual grass control as well. And if growers are in a dicamba or a Liberty program, Boundary or Broad-X XC are also an excellent fit.
All right. Yeah, hit them once, hit them twice, hit them three times, and take them out. All right. Thank you, Dane. That was Dane Bowers, herbicide technical product lead at Syngenta. Learn more about best practices for managing resistant weeds through the Resistance Fighter program from Syngenta.
Sure Start 2, Culex, Durango DMA, Classic.
More than 100 crop protection products.
Enserve, Ever Pre-X.
That's what's available to you through the all-new True Choice offer from Corteva Agriscience, the agriculture division of Dow DuPont.
Approach Prima, Sonic.
It's an offer simpler than saying all these names in 60 seconds.
Trivance, Realm Q.
Just buy Pioneer brand seed and Corteva cash is immediately put into your True Choice account at your crop protection retailer. No waiting, no rebate. Then you can put that Corteva cash towards more than 100 crop protection herbicides, insecticides, fungicides, and stabilizers. And as you can hear, there are a lot of options for you.
Open Sky, Elevore.
With True Choice, the only hard part is figuring out which of these products you want.
Perfect Match, Resicor, Instinct.
Ask your local Pioneer sales representative or your crop protection retailer about True Choice. New, simple, now.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success. Like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
It's time to get dirt rich with new Poncho Votivo 2.0 corn seed treatment. The increase in microbial activity in the soil helps get more nutrients to the plant, and you get an average 3.8 bushel per acre yield increase over the original Poncho Votivo, all with the trusted insect and nematode protection you're used to. So be dirt rich, because that's smart. Ask your seed dealer for the new Poncho Votivo 2.0 today. Grow smart with BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
Machinery Pete's having a huge year-end unreserved online dealer auction in conjunction with Big Iron. Items are open for bidding now and close December 27th. Go to machinerypete.com/auction. Unreserved, lien-free, no buyer fees. Start bidding now.
All right. Welcome back to AgriTalk. Clinton Griffison for Chip Flory today. Trying to get in the holiday spirit as we race toward another Christmas. You know, I said this on Friday. Just another reminder, fellas. Christmas is coming. If you haven't got those presents wrapped up yet or even started, now's the time. I'm going to give you a reminder throughout the week, just so you know. All right, 855-4-TALK-AG if you want to jump in here and join the conversation. We're going to continue a couple great conversations here. We're going to have Joe Sheely, Communications Director, U.S. Meat Export Federation, talking about export sales. And then we'll have Machinery Pete here talking about some really cool auction stuff going on. And, of course, he'll take your calls. We'll take your calls. And we're going to hit the markets at the bottom of the hour talking about some export sales that are going on. Some pretty good stuff. Right now, why don't we bring in Joe? And, Joe, you guys sent out a pretty interesting report on Friday, and overall, meat exports seem to be hanging in there pretty tough.
Yes, I would say that it was another, these were the October results,
sure.
Which are the latest from USDA. I would say it was another big month for beef, the second largest we've ever had in terms of value, and about $727 million. So beef exports really remain on a major roll. We're headed for $8 billion this year. I think we'll have no problem going over that milestone. On the pork side, we continue to see a pattern that has developed since we've been facing the retaliatory duties. Pork has been hit harder by those trade disputes with Mexico, China, and Canada than have the beef exports. And so on the pork side, I would say we were seasonally higher, higher mm-hmm. than we've been in recent months, but still down a little bit year over year. And continue to see pressure, especially on pork export value, from those retaliatory duties. Right now, we're facing a 20% duty on most of the pork that goes into Mexico, whereas that is usually duty-free.
Sure.
And in China, we're facing a 62% tariff, which is five times the normal tariff, the rate that most everyone else that sells pork to China is facing of 12%. So it makes it a pretty difficult market, especially for a lot of the pork offal items, pork variety meat items that we have traditionally shipped in large volumes to that market.
Yeah, I do think it's interesting that, one, there's so many headwinds, it seems like, on some of these trades, including with some of our biggest buyers. But yet you look at our January through October, exports are 1% above last year. Values up 1%. That's not a lot, but at least it's something. It's not completely negative. On the beef side of things, we're up 9% higher, 17 in value. So, we're hanging in there, which I think is
right.
Good.
Right. I think clearly the demand for pork is still pretty solid. I think that the fact that we're still ahead of last year's pace in volume tells you what a great first quarter we had
sure.
Before the retaliatory duties came into the picture. But also that demand has held up pretty well, all things considered, and we continue to see a pretty good returns on from other markets. We've had other markets outside of those of Mexico and China that have stepped up their purchases, doing very well in Central and South America. Australia, for example, a lot of people don't realize Australia is actually our third largest market for hams, for ham exports behind Mexico and China, and they've stepped up purchasing this year. And so and we've already set a record for pork exports to Korea. So Korea, in addition to being a real red hot market for U.S. beef, also a star performer this year for U.S. pork. So I would say you're correct. All things considered, we think exports have held up really well. But we're still, it's still frustrating that we won't reach our full potential until those retaliatory duties are out of the picture.
As we look at some of the movement on that front, have we seen that Mexico and China are willing to buy, let's say, pork, regardless of these tariffs? And what does that give you hope for? Hopefully, once this is, eliminated or these are pulled off and we get back to whatever normal is, what that might do for the market?
Well, the two markets are actually quite different. Mexico, we are uniquely positioned geographically and also in terms of infrastructure, uniquely positioned to provide fresh pork to that market. Some of that goes to retail and food service, but a lot of that goes into further processing. And so the volumes have held up pretty well. Because we do have cost advantages and we're able to take that product really right off the conveyor into a combo bin and put it on a truck and it's in Mexico just within hours of leaving the plant. But the 20% tariff, it's unrealistic to think that the end customer is going to pick that up. And so what we're seeing is everybody in the supply chain has to absorb part of that 20% that the Mexican government is essentially taking off the top. In China, it's a bit different. We don't really have a lot of natural advantages in China, so you're seeing our volumes hit harder there. Whereas especially in some of those lower value items, let's say feet, ears, things like that, for which China is a major destination, some of those actually drop really become economically infeasible to export. So you're seeing some volumes of product drop off there more severely than you would in Mexico, because in Mexico we still are, I would say, the dominant supplier, but that dominant market share is somewhat at risk because of the additional cost of doing business there.
Yeah, so as we talk about trade, and obviously we're having a conversation currently right now in Washington on a free trade agreement with Japan, does that that should bode well for beef if we can get a free trade agreement, much like the South Korea agreement seems to have jump-started some stuff?
Yes, it would bode well for beef and pork. For beef, Japan has a 38.5% tariff on most of the imported beef the beef that it imports today. The only major beef supplier that gets a bit of a break from that is Australia. They've had a free trade agreement in place for a couple of years now, so they're paying about 27% on frozen, about 29% on chilled, which is a pretty significant advantage over everybody else. You're going to see Canada and New Zealand and also Mexico get similar relief to that through the TPP-11 agreement that'll go into effect at the end of this year. And you'll see actually all of those countries will get deeper cuts to more tariff relief than what Australia did in its bilateral FTA. So that underscores the urgency of U.S. beef getting similar tariff relief and why we want these negotiations to move quickly. On the pork side, the tariff system is much more complicated, but there are significant tariffs and additional costs of putting pork into Japan that our major competitors will get relief from through the TPP-11 and through the Japan-EU Economic Partnership Agreement, which I understand just cleared the upper house of the Japanese parliament over the weekend. So once once the European Union finishes up its domestic procedures, that agreement's likely to take effect probably early next year. And so at that point, all of our major red meat competitors in Japan will have gained tariff relief, and we will not have. And so that's why I think you'll hear a lot of the people testifying at the hearing today at the U.S. Trade Representative's office saying that we're thrilled that the U.S. and Japan are sitting down to have formal trade negotiations, but they really need to move quickly if we're going to stay competitive in what is our largest market for red meat exports.
Sure. As we work forward on some of this trade, we keep calling it a trade war, trade truce with China. We got 90 days here to try to get something done. What are you hearing from exporters in this space, in the meats, red meat space? What are they saying about some of the hurdles that they've faced this year, how do they feel about the ability to get through some of this over the next 90 days?
Well, with China, it's never entirely clear exactly where the relationship is going. President Trump met with President Xi, there were statements about buying more agricultural product. I don't think anybody's entirely clear on exactly what that means. In our situation, I think most of our exporters really aren't looking for any foreign government to commit to buying. Just remove the obstacles. Just let us be on a level playing field. I think that's really all of that our red meat exporters are really asking, is that we can either have hopefully duty-free access to markets, but at least be on a level playing field with everybody else. And in China's case, that generally means you're paying about 12%, which is a higher duty than you would like, but one that you can live with. There's a lot of speculation about China having a greater need for pork over the next year because of African swine fever. I think it's too early to say exactly how that will play out. But if they have an increased need for imported pork, that's certainly a train we don't want to miss, so to speak.
No,
and we'd
sir.
Like to be positioned to help fill that need. So,
yep.
So that's another factor that we'd like to be able to capitalize on.
Gotcha.
If it materializes.
Thanks, Joe.
Palmer amaranth, water hemp, ragweed, and mare's tail. Doesn't it just make you want to give them the pounding they deserve? Now you can with Dyflex Duo Herbicide. It's the post-emergence corn herbicide with two proven sites of action, so you get powerful control of the toughest weeds, built-in resistance management, and excellent crop safety. So don't just hit weeds. Pound them like never before with Dyflex Duo. Learn more at DyflexDuo.us. Always read and follow label instructions.
Spray nozzles are some of the smallest and most overlooked pieces of equipment on a sprayer, but they can have the biggest impact on accuracy, efficiency, and drift potential. Worn nozzles can change distribution patterns and cause under or over application, potentially impacting your bottom line. Now's a great time to replace your worn nozzles. Save 10% on John Deere spray nozzles, only available at your local John Deere dealer. Offer ends February 28th, 2019. See your participating dealer for details.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Welcome to Markets Now. We've got Brian Grady, Pro Farmer, here. Hey, Brian, we're watching these markets. Any movement off that announcement of about corn purchased by Mexico?
No, really big purchase this morning announced by USDA, but really no movement at all. We're seeing corn futures trade about a penny lower in most contracts, so a little bit off of their session low, but struggling to find buyers despite that big purchase. The soybean market, it's down about 3 to 5 cents, back and forth on the Chinese stuff. Robert Lighthizer, the U.S. Trade rep over the weekend, said that there's a hard deadline at March 1st to get a deal done with China, and I think that's kind of spooked the markets a little bit here, as did the whole deal with the arrest of the Chinese telecommunications CEO and what impacts that'll have on the trade talks. You know, we're hearing a couple different things on that
right.
It may have it, and two, that it may not influence it at all. So we'll see where it all goes, but just kind of back and forth trade in the bean market as we wait on Chinese purchases, and that's the big thing right now, is when are Chinese purchases confirmed.
Any word on wheat today? We had kind of a dynamic wheat market last week.
Yeah, back to some of the demand concerns that we've had. We had good export numbers last week, but then this morning's inspections data was on the disappointing side, and we're under some pressure here to start off the week in the wheat market.
Anything on livestock to report?
Well, we do have December hogs. They're trading higher as they head into expiration soon. But the deferred months are under some pressure, and I think Chinese uncertainty is probably the biggest driver there. Cattle futures started firmer on higher cash trade, but have now weakened.
All right. Thank you so much, Brian. We'll be back with more AgriTalk. Stick with us. So relaxing. Welcome to the holidays. I can see Clark W. Griswold staring out of his window right now, looking at his swimming pool, and Eddie starting to jump in off the diving board. So good. Such good memories. Great way. I was watching that movie with people this weekend. So it seemed to, it's that time of year when we can reflect and enjoy our time together. And, you know, as the line goes in the movie, it's the holidays. We're all miserable. So welcome. Welcome. I hope you're here. Hey, we've got our good friend Machinery Pete here to talk about some exciting stuff happening out there. But before we get to that, Greg, I want to ask you, do you guys have any great Christmas traditions that you like to do in your family?
Well, I'm going to play off of your intro there, Clinton, on the Christmas Vacation movie, because when that movie was released in 1989, my wife Jackie and I went to see it in the theater.
Oh, really?
It was awesome. On my birthday, December 1st, 89, our first Christmas together. After the movie, we stopped and bought a Christmas tree, brought it home to our little apartment. And that movie, as our kids grew up and left home, we watched it every year. In fact, a few years ago in the summer, when the air conditioning went out, we went down into the basement, the only cool spot, and we watched the movie. We turned the sound off, and we said every line from the movie we didn't need, because we've seen it so many times. But we just love those holiday movies.
Oh yeah, same in our house. My wife this year bought me a little Clark Griswold Village, and it's got RV, and it's got Clark outside with the chainsaw, and it's got the trees where they go and buy the trees. Such a great, I love it. Just absolutely.
Actually, I actually have a Griswold jersey 00 in my closet. That's how much we love the movie The Blackhawks.
Nice. That's so funny. Hey, so speaking of Christmas and presents, there's a pretty cool auction happening right now. Why don't we start off just talking about that thing? Because it's kind of an online, unreserved, lots of opportunities there.
Yeah, it really is a kind of a big event, Clint. We're really excited about it. Folks maybe saw a word drop on it last week, but it's our Machine Repeat year-end unreserved online dealer auction we're doing in conjunction with our friends at BigIron.com.
Nice.
And the bidding opened December 6th right on Machine Repeat. You'll see, if you go there, you'll see directions to take you to the listings, machinerepeat.com/auction. But, yeah, it opened last week, and the bidding closes December 27th, and I think there's up over 160 items on the sale now, Clinton, from all over the country, our dealer friends.
Oh, wow.
So really a unique buying opportunity here. Year-end, of course, as you start to look ahead to 2019, what you're going to need for equipment, a little bit of everything. I know there's, I think, 29 mechanical front-wheel drive tractors, I think 8 combines, bunch of sprayers, large square balers, round balers, again, from all over the country. So just go to machinerypeat.com, folks. And the thing on this sale now, working with our friends at Big Iron, this is absolute. Everything goes to the highest bidder. There's no reserves. And there's also no buyer's fee.
That's awesome.
So, you know,
what a,
Big Iron has
what
identified
a cool
that.
Event.
Yeah, it's really fun. It's a two-sided effort here because, of course, we're working with our dealer partners to try and help them, you know, clear up some excess inventory. But at the same time, our farm audience, you know, on the auction side, the opportunity for some great deals here. So, yeah, we're excited about it, and it should be great fun.
Is anything hot right now as you've been watching this thing unfold?
Ooh, it's almost more like what isn't hot.
Okay.
Clinton. If it's in good condition, the market, it's been astounding. If folks have been following our social media posts, it's crazy. But again, it's all about condition.
Mm-hmm.
And we're seeing late model 1 to 3 year old stuff is in demand under warranty. Very strong demand there. And also the pre-tier 4 stuff, the tractors in particular and combines, the 08s, 9s, 10s, just eye-popping numbers we're seeing around the country on nice auctions. So it's quite an interesting end of the year here for sure.
What else are you seeing out there as you travel the countryside? Are there any other trends that you're seeing as far as equipment goes? Obviously, that's a big one, is that kind of pre-tier 4 stuff in good condition. I know you say that and tell us that a lot, the good condition stuff always
right.
seems to go. But what about the stuff in not so good condition? Is it still hanging in there or no?
Well, a couple of things I'd say there. I mean, if it's average condition, the pricing is sort of sliding slowly.
Okay.
I wouldn't say it's necessarily holding. It is sliding lower. The demand is focused clearly on the good condition stuff. And I think what's happened, Clinton, because the volume of late model stuff has decreased so much on dealer lots compared to 3 to 5 years ago.
Right.
That it's created more buying pressure when those 1 to 3 year old items show up at auction. So there's just, you know, you can't stand there as a bidder or online bidder and say, well, if I don't get this one, there's my dealer down the road's got 17 for sale. No, you might have 2 now. So it's changed things a little bit. One of the other hot spots we continue to see is with self-propelled sprayers.
Mm-hmm.
And I know one example on our Machine Repeat online dealer auction here, our friends at Midwest Machinery up in central Minnesota, we were just up filming with them for our TV show, but I know they have a 2015 Case IH Patriot 4440 sprayer on our online event. And it's got low hours, a really sharp unit, local trade-in, I believe. And I looked the other night, Clinton, and the day of December 6th when our online auction opened, it already had 20 bids on it.
Holy
and now
cow.
I see it's got 36 bids, it's already up to 76K, and we're like, you know, 2+ weeks away from December 27th close. So a lot of demand for good self-propelled sprayers out there.
Okay, okay. Hey, before we get too far in this segment, let's do your pick of the week.
Machine Repeat's pick of the week is brought to you by MachineFinder.com. Where can you find the most comprehensive inventory of John Deere certified pre-owned tractors, combines, and sprayers? MachineFinder.com. Sometimes the best new addition to your fleet isn't new.
So you were in Minnesota, and you've got a pretty good pick, pretty cool pick there.
Yeah, there was no debate on what the Pete's pick of the week was going to be this week. It came Saturday, just up the road in Kenyon, Minnesota, about half hour north of Rochester, where I live. Our good friends at Maring Auction Company, one of their consignment sales, they have three a year on the lot there on the north edge of Kenyon, beautiful little farming community. And on this sale Saturday, Clinton, was a 1990 John Deere 4455, mechanical front-wheel drive, was owned by the city of Kenyon. Huh. They got it through a grant. They got a grant back in 1990, and they only used it to move a little manure sludge over the years. And they just kind of shedded it. Only had 1,904 hours on it, power shift. So I did a preview video on it last week. We knew there was going to be a lot of interest. So I went up to film it Saturday. It sold for $90,500. That's the highest auction price ever on a 4455 sold without a loader. And again, you can imagine, Clinton, a 4455, how many I've seen sold at auction over the last decades.
Hey, what did that sell for new?
Well, there was a lot of chatter about that. I think it was kind of in that mid-60 range, depending on how it was spec'd out, if it was power shift or quad. But so $90,500. I went to a guy in Wisconsin. I'm not sure if he bought it to collect or to use it. But if you want to watch the video of it selling, folks, just go to machinerypete.com. We got video. You'll enjoy it.
Awesome. Now, as far as like these over the years, do they always seem to sell pretty well if they're in pretty good condition?
Well, it's the trend we've seen here. It's sort of a human thing, but again, once the stuff gets to be 10, 15 years old, and with deer, the 50 series, the 55 series, the Magnum series for the Case IH side, increasing demand. So when now we see, they're 25 plus years old, and when you happen to see it, one with super low hours, one owner, it's kind of Katie bar the door. So I know Matt Maring, the auctioneer on the sale Saturday, told me they had calls from literally all over North America.
Wow.
On this thing. So it's not every, 4455 will ring the bell like this, but what's happening is the nicest ones, everybody and their brother wants it. And then I was standing there. I thought, actually, right before it sold, a guy asked me, Clinton, he said, "Hey, Pete, you think I can get this thing for 45? And I smiled and said, "Well, sir, I wish you luck. I don't think so." And they opened the bidding at 50.
Oh, my gosh.
And it just whooshed, took off.
I thought
it might bring 75. But again, it's kind of a one-of-a-kind deal, and you can see what happens on the price.
Oh, yeah. And you seem to have those stories over and over. Is a one-of-a-kind, something really unique, super low hours or different. It's always going to bring some pretty good bids. Hey, now, you said that video's up online, but there's some other videos coming out here pretty quick.
Yeah, on Wednesday, Clint, we do need to mention we'll be dropping some really cool feature videos from the Peoria Farm Show. We had our Machinery Pete staff there doing some features. I think one is with our good friends at McFarland Manufacturing up in Wisconsin. They make unbelievable tillage products, so we'll catch up on the latest with them. And also another feature video with the Fellowship of Christian Farmers International. They're doing some great things there. So, check out machinerypete.com this week for those videos, folks.
Yeah, and what are they? They're just featuring some of the equipment or some of the people. Give us a little inside of what they're doing.
A little bit of both. I mean, when we do these manufacturer videos, what we found over the years, the manufacturers, whatever they make for farm equipment, there's stories to tell. So sure. McFarland, for example, I believe their history goes back almost 100 years or so, when they actually used to make tractors. I think a brand at the time was called Wisconsin Tractor. So the story on how they've evolved their business and now, again, making the cutting-edge tillage products they make to help farmers do their thing. So we just like telling the story. And again, if you go to any farm show, you walk down the aisle, there's great stories to tell right and left. So we just enjoy putting the spotlight on them.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, stick with us after the break here. We'll continue this conversation on the other side. Take your calls, 855-4-TALK-AG. If you'd like to join the conversation, we're also going to talk about some new for sale by owner opportunities for you and talk about some other farm auctions and prices going on around the country. So, hey, hang with us. AgriTalk will return in just a couple of minutes here.
capitalize on market opportunities with Pro Farmer's Daily Advice Monitor. Whether on your desktop or on your phone, visit tryprofarmer.com and get a generous one-month free trial. Pro Farmer only focuses on the news that impacts the market, so you won't scroll through pages of articles to find what's really impacting your business. Plus, get full access to cash bids, charting tools, and more. Visit tryprofarmer.com right now. That's tryprofarmer.com.
First-generation farmers are a special breed. Farm Journal business editor Annalisa Laca helps these ag unicorns tell their story on a new podcast, The First Years.
It may have been hard, but there's a lot of good things that came out of it. A lot of time we spent together and our kids, I think, were better for it.
Join me each week as I chat with first-generation farmers and ranchers who have what it takes, grit and determination, to start from nothing.
The First Years with Annalisa Laca is available where you access your favorite podcasts, iTunes, Google Play, and now the new AgriTalk app.
Find it now at shopfarmjournal.com. Brand new to the shop is The Best of Tractor Tales, as seen each week on U.S. Farm Report. This two DVD set features dozens of classic machines and the collectors who bring them back to life. You'll get one DVD that's all green, The Best of John Deere. The second DVD includes classics like Alice Chalmers and many more. Buy one DVD for $29.95 or buy the set for $49.95. Order today at shopfarmjournal.com or call toll-free 877-847-9599. You can find it now at shopfarmjournal.com.
Hi, I'm Ag Day host Clinton Griffiths, and I invite you to join me each morning as we cover the nation's food system, from fields of green to orchards of orange and livestock everywhere in between. America runs on agriculture, and here at Ag Day, agriculture's what we do best. Listen as our analysts track the markets, learn about innovations in technology and sustainability, and live the country lifestyle through the eyes of rural America. Join me, Clinton Griffiths, for Ag Day, the country experience.
Growers face enough worries today. SDS and nematodes shouldn't be among them. Alevo seed treatment from BASF is the only product that offers effective protection against both SDS and nematodes throughout the critical growing period. Growers get amazing early season protection for stronger profit potential at harvest. So worry about weather. Don't worry about SDS or nematodes with Alevo. To find out more about Alevo and how to protect your soybeans, talk to your seed dealer or your BASF rep. Grow smart with BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
Current price times 1,000 acres, carry the one.
These days, it's hard to make the math work for your soybean fields. The BASF Liberty Link system with Liberty Herbicide makes it easier. Start with a 2-plus bushel per acre yield advantage. Add in lower system input costs and more complete weed control, and you get an extra $33 or more profit potential per acre compared to Asgrow Roundup Ready to Extend soybeans. Grow smart with Liberty Link and BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
I'm talking with Brad Walk of Seagull, Illinois, who tried Poncho Votivo 2.0 this growing season. Brad, is Poncho Votivo 2.0 going to be back on your farm again next year?
I plan to plant the Poncho Votivo 2.0 in 2019 because of the results from this year. Exceptional stock health and yield. Comparing Poncho Votivo 2.0 to other varieties without it, I could see more girth in the ears. I could see kernel depth was a little better. We did have a yield trial on 8 rows, a quarter mile long, had an average of 302 bushels per acre on a independent weigh wagon, and those are dry bushels. And then we had a competitor that was 292.
Oh, okay. So you broke through 300 bushels with Poncho Votivo?
It's pretty crazy. It's just a great feeling. It's just, you've been working your whole life to try to hit that number. It's just always kind of felt like a, you know, something that may never happen. And this year it's opened up a lot of eyes.
So what about the kernel depth? That had to be the difference.
Oh, that's big. It's huge. It's the test weight really adds to the yield, and just the girth of the ear. The kernel depth is huge. So that just all adds up. You need all the help you can get to 300 bushels.
So how did Poncho Votivo 2.0 corn stand up to the weather that you had this year?
We've had several windstorms here. The stalks with Poncho Votivo 2.0 seem to be standing a lot better. In the combine, you can see down the row a good quarter mile, no stalk disintegration or cannibalism. It's just a good feeling to know that the combine's not gonna have to slow down, and very hardy corn, good standability.
So how much are you gonna plant next year?
Planting Poncho Votivo 2.0 this year, I've found at least a 10 bushel per acre difference. I mean, 10 bushels per acre, that's at least $35 an acre. That just carries over all the acres and really adds up. That's a huge benefit for our bottom line. Next year, I plan to plant nearly 100% of my acres in Poncho Votivo 2.0.
To get the Poncho Votivo 2.0 yield advantage for 2019, talk to your local seed representative.
I'm Andrew McCray, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, farmer-focused podcast. It's all about production agriculture. Farming the Countryside is available wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. It's brought to you by Nutrient Ag Solutions, the world's largest provider of crop inputs and services.
Yes. Ashley Davenport helping us get through the holidays here with our bumps today. Thank you, Ashley. That takes me right to my happy place, I think. And joining me there this morning is Greg Peterson. Hey, Greg, we got a tweet from Tanner Deering asking about a price. What would you think a Kenzie 2000 30-inch 8-row with John Deere row units, precision clean sweeps, V-drive, and airbags? What do you think?
Well, it's an interesting question, Clint. I think that the interesting aspect there is the 8-row angle.
Oh, sure.
Now, if I look at Kenzie 2000s of all the ones we've seen at auction, I've got 107 of them we've seen sold the last few years. Great, great majority are 6-row or 611s. Now, I did just see, actually it was on Friday, farm auction in Lexington, Illinois. Our friends at Sullivan Auctioneers, they sold a very nice Kinsey 2000 again. It was a 611, pretty sharp rig. That brought 17,000. Now, if I look the last year and a half or so, Clinton, most of the nice 6-rows kind of in that 12 to 15, 5 range.
Okay.
But to try and narrow down to the 8-row 30s, I got to go back a ways. I did find one last year. It was on a consignment sale, Southeast Minnesota. It was an 8-row 30, but it was a twin row, and that just brought $5,250.
Okay.
But that, again, was a consignment auction. Plus, I think Tanner mentioned it sounds like the one he's looking at is pretty spec'd out.
Sure.
And that's one thing we're seeing with these used planters. You know, the work they've done, the retrofit they've had done to them, that can really ratchet up the value. But I just don't have much on the 8-row 30 Kinsey 2000s. But hopefully you can maybe go off of that 6-row a little bit and kind of get a feel for it.
Get kind of an idea of what it may do. There's so much so many things you can add to these planters these days to really kind of, like you said, spec them out, add a little extra life to them, kind of, give them a little more work life out there. Hey, as far as for sale by owner, that's something you guys are starting to do there, machinerypete.com, right?
It is. We added that feature just recently. Folks, if you go to machinerypete.com, towards the top of the website, you'll see a little link. It'll say Sell Mine.
Okay.
And if you click that, what we've added, for years, Clint, I was frustrated because, we talk to farmers every day, and everyone's got one or two items for sale.
Sure.
And, of course, the auction route's a tremendous route to go. But if you're selling it privately, the problem was wherever you listed it, it just went into this vacuum. And unless people went to that site, Craigslist or different boards or whatever, you can't find it. Well, now if you list it with us, what happens is that when people go to Google and they type in, like that Kinsey 2000 planter for sale, they type that in, Machinery Pete listings show up right at the top so that we get more eyeballs on it. And just a couple cool tractor listings from the past few days, folks maybe saw my tweet last night, but Jason from Southeast Iowa just listed a really sharp 1941 Farmall M.
Oh, yeah.
So if you want a little antique tractor Christmas present, Jason's got a beauty for you there. And you can find the info at machinerypete.com. If you're looking a little newer, Clinton, I posted a note, I think Sunday, about a 2006 John Deere 7830, mechanical front-wheel drive, 1,943 hours, always shedded. And this is a for sale by owner from Montgomery City, Missouri. So, again, you can find that out at machinerypete.com. And, again, we just want to help people. If you're selling,
sure,
we want to get more eyeballs on it and help you move it at a higher price.
So is this something you set your price? It's not the eBay style where it auctions it for you? Or
right. This would be set your price. Now some people, and this is a general tip for listeners, folks, but when you're listing something for sale, don't ever put call for price. If you can help it, because the research we do, when people see that, they just pass it by.
They just go by.
And they just think it's too high, and they don't even call. You want people to call and engage them in discussion about whatever you're selling, whether it's a piece of crap or if it's, whatever.
Whatever.
So
that might be someone's best thing. They may want that piece. of.
Exactly. And, you know, the honesty in the listing, if it's got an issue, just say it's got an issue and list as many pictures as you can. So it's really fun at machinerypete.com to see folks like Jason or the Missouri listing. You know, I think there's 10 pictures on that 7830. So, again, trying to create a good situation for both buyers and sellers.
Do you like or best offer, Greg? What does the research say about adding that to it?
You can say it, but you got to have a price on it.
Okay.
You know, I think they're, that's not a bad thing to say. I guess,
you know, for me, it's always key to ask for or to offer less. I mean, that's what I always take away from it.
I think it's a general assumption that, you know, whatever the asking price is, or best offer, I think opens the door on the seller side. Hey, I'm willing to talk.
Sure.
So, it might not be a bad idea.
It'd be bad to do.
But folks, again, got to put a price on it. Otherwise, the phone ain't going to ring.
Okay. All right, good. Hey, you've got a couple nice farm auctions coming up this week. Tell us about them.
Yeah, tomorrow our friend Mike Mosky has a sale. The McClure brothers in Decatur, Illinois, a farm auction. Just posted a video of it on our social media, Facebook and Twitter. Got a 2010 John Deere 9670 combine, 1,700 engine hours. Three nice Case IH tractors, a Magnum 260, a Stagger 435, an MX-100.
Wow.
Then Wednesday, out in Marion, South Dakota, Weeman Land and Auction. Folks know them far and wide. They have their annual year-end, a huge consignment sale, online bidding, tons of late model equipment on this sale. So check out WeemanAuction.com, folks. And then Saturday, our friends Seidenstricker, John Deere dealer in Missouri, has a big dealer auction in Palmyra, Missouri, through Wheeler Auction and Real Estate. A lot of late model equipment. Check out WheelerAuctions.com for that online bidding.
Okay. Hey, one more time, tell us where we can go to that big iron auction that Machinery Pete's partnering with.
Yep, you bet. Just go to machinerypete.com/auction, folks. We'll have all the information, all the equipment right there for you.
All right. Can't wait to see how that goes. Really exciting, pretty neat event. As always, Greg, appreciate it. Thank you for being on the show, and I hope you get a chance to get those lights hung and, you know, don't fall off the ladder like our friend Clark.
All right. All right. Take it easy, buddy.
All right. Thanks, Greg. You know, that tree wouldn't fit in our front yard, Dad. Well, it's not going in our front yard, Russ. It's going in our living room. Thanks for joining us here on AgriTalk.
It's Digging Deeper with the Mosaic Company, the show where two agronomy experts take your questions about crop nutrition. Here are your hosts, Kurt Woolfolk and Ross Bender, senior agronomists from the Mosaic Company.
Hi, this is Kurt.
And this is Ross. And today we're answering the questions you sent us on social media.
Here's one from a corn grower in Iowa. As I plan for next season, what product would you recommend to increase yield next year?
Every crop stands to benefit from better nutrient management, especially phosphorus and sulfur. For example, Micro Essentials is a fertilizer source that contains phosphorus sulfur, and we know it works because it helps provide uniform nutrient distribution, increased nutrient uptake, and season-long availability.
We have up to 12 years of data that suggests that yield of 7.2 with Micro Essential SZ compared to traditional fertilizer sources, and the yield speaks for itself.
Fertility is the foundation for high yields, and this is the new frontier of dry fertilizer.
Have any questions you want Kurt and Ross to tackle? Tweet to us at MicroEssentials on Twitter or send us a message on Facebook. And to learn more about smart crop nutrition, visit MicroEssentials.com.
Thanks to the Resistance Fighter Program from Syngenta for sponsoring this AgriTalk podcast. Visit ResistanceFighter.com and talk to your retailer or Syngenta representative about how to best manage resistant weeds.